This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Welcome to Curaleaf, a medical marijuana dispensary. Whether you're a longtime patient or you're just getting acquainted with this incredible plant, Curaleaf of Pennsylvania is honored to guide you along your medical marijuana journey. Visit us soon at our new State College location.
This is the Blue White Breakdown, the premier podcast for all things Penn State football.
Talk about culture. It's something that should show up in every aspect of your program.
It's the Blue White Breakdown, brought to you by Penn Live. Here are your hosts, Bob Flounders and Dustin Hawkinsmith.
Welcome in. It's the Blue White Breakdown, brought to you by Penn State Health. Bob Flounders is here. I'm Dustin Hawkinsmith. We're talking about the latest in Penn State football. And Bob, watchlist season. I don't know how do you feel about watchlist season?
You know what? At the start of it, you get a little bit excited about it because, you know, hey, should I post that John Clifford's on the Davey O'Brien watch list? But there's like 107 quarterbacks on the watch list. And then every day it's another one, and it's another one, and it's another one, and it's another one. And I'm like, maybe the better idea is just to wait till they're all done and then just say, hey, here's Penn State's watch list count. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know that the fan base is burning with desire to know, like, all the players on watch list. If there's a surprise or an omission, I think that's a good post. But I can tell you every watch list who's going to be on it for Penn State pretty much without fail. So, yeah, I'm not that excited. I do think there are some Penn State players absolutely this year, even though they lost a lot of good players, that are deserving of the watch list consideration. And I think that bigger question is, who are the young Penn State players that maybe aren't going to be talked about now because they don't have a resume? But, you know, by the middle of the season, they're like, boy, not only should they have been on the watch list, they should be maybe at the end of the year, they could be a semifinalist for the award. Who knows?
That's an interesting talking point. I was going to ask you a question, too, but I'd like to explore that a little bit. And a few names might come to mind. Like, I can't imagine, we're sitting here now, the Mackey Award watch list is not out, but Theo Johnson, I can see him not being on that list because he wasn't a starter last year, where he maybe emerges. You know, maybe you could have a Kobe King emerge, like no resume yet. Nick Singleton, obviously, for the Doak Walker Award, we'll talk about that one too. Mitchell Tinsley for the Blitnikoff, we just found out a little bit ago that Parker Washington is on that list, deservedly so. Kalen King at cornerback is another good one. And I think Adisa Isaac, too. You know, he's not a young player, but somebody who I don't think will be on a watch list. But if he gets off to a fast start, maybe he gets there.
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw it on Twitter, but I saw that it was one of those Pro Football Focus. They have like a college section. I don't know if it was Mike Farrell. They had like the top 10 tight ends in the country going into the season. And it's a pretty nice list of names. There were a couple of Big Ten players on that list. And so Theo retweeted it, and his comment was, keep sleeping. He's clearly a guy that I think, for the tight end thing, I mean, it's they're not really giving you the award if you're a good blocker. So you're going to have some pretty snazzy receiving stats, or at least a bunch of touchdowns. You know, think back to the days of Gesicki and Pat Freiermuth. Theo Johnson is definitely a guy that no one's really talking about now, but by the middle of October, he could be a huge problem for secondary. The guy is legitimately 6'5", 6'6", 260 pounds. I had a chance to talk to him, you know, in the spring for a magazine article. I confirmed it because I asked the other tight ends in the room, hey, I know he was fast. What was his exact 40 time that he ran, and they all had the same number. So he ran a 4.51 40. Now think about that. And that beat Gesicki's record at Penn State. He's the same kind of player, a big receiver. And he said, you know what? I can get lower than that. So to think about a Penn State tight end that runs in a sub 4.5, there's really no excuse if he doesn't have a really good year. And it might not be his fault. I know he dropped some passes last year, but man, if I'm the offensive coordinator and if I'm Sean Clifford, I'm going to try and get that guy the ball a lot in the red zone, especially.
I mean, you think about margin for error and the way that he can jump and run. I mean, you don't have to be perfect at all. He can be covered. It doesn't matter. I mean, most of the time, whoever's covering him is going to be at some kind of disadvantage. So all you got to do is throw it up. Yeah.
He's of all the Penn State receivers, and the other two are really good players too, Tyler Warren, Brenton Strange. Theo Johnson is definitely the most dangerous one in the passing game. I like Brenton Strange a lot too. I think he's probably their best blocker. Warren, I think, he's a former quarterback that's still getting comfortable at the position. But to have three tight ends like that, I would like to see more two tight end sets, maybe less three wide receiver sets. It might also, who knows, help in the running game. But yeah, that's a Theo Johnson's a guy you mentioned. Singleton. For sure. I'm pretty sure Penn State's best offensive lineman is going to be Juice. And I think center is his best position. I'm not going to say he's winning the Remington, but I think he's a guy that could be like an all Big Ten player. Maybe a third team all Big Ten player. I don't think he's the worry when you talk about their offensive line. I don't know if PJ Mustipher is going to be 100%. Otherwise, I'd put him in for some awards as well. I'm anxious to see Adisa Isaac. I'm really, really anxious to see Denai Dennis Sutton, too. I mean, he's just a guy that he is not built like your typical freshman defensive lineman. So I'm anxious to see him. Two guys we didn't talk about, Jair Brown, obviously, Curtis Jacobs, and I'd even throw Joey Porter in there, too. They have some good players, but to get them all kind of on the same page, and it's really going to come down to how many points they can score in a game. So the more players they have on the offensive-minded watch list, even at midseason, the better the chances of Penn State having a surprising season.
Who do you think stays on a watch list the longest? Which player on Penn State's roster stays on? And my other question for you, and you can ponder that first one, is so Sean Clifford was on the Maxwell Award watch list for most outstanding college football player. If you had to pick one Penn State player to be on that list, if you were making the list, which Penn State player would be on the most outstanding list for you?
Yeah, most outstanding Penn State player. To me, I mean, you can start by eliminating some players in a hurry. To me, I think by the end of the season, I think it'll be two or three guys will be in the running for Penn State's most outstanding player. Jair Brown's one. I think Curtis Jacobs, two, although I'm a little bit mindful of the fact he's moving inside to play in traffic a little bit. He's just not the biggest guy. I worry about that. And it's not Mitchell Tinsley. It's Parker Washington. I just think that he probably is a guy that I don't think he can really cover Parker Washington because of what he can do. And when you throw in the fact he can run a good routes and he's really hard, he's deceptively strong. He's like 215 pounds. He's not stocky, but I think he's 5'10". He's almost like a running back in space. So to me, I think of those three, I would go between either Parker or Jair Brown.
You know, it's an interesting point with Parker Washington where you saw like with the 49ers last year, Deebo Samuel was that sort of running back, wide receiver hybrid. He seems like a guy, like if that's going to really become a thing at the next level, usually all it takes is one player to really open the eyes of other organizations. Like Parker Washington can do that job. You know, when you look at the ball skills and the flair for acrobatic catches, the fact that he's running a sub-4.5 right now, the fact that he's got that center of gravity, he's built like a running back. He can run, jump, he runs good routes. I mean, it really just kind of comes down to him, to opportunity. And, you know, it would really be surprising to me if he doesn't have a really big year this year. I know Mitchell Tinsley will be there and Keandre Lambert-Smith is going to demand some attention and those tight ends are too. And they're going to try to establish the run, but Parker Washington's numbers should grow. And I don't know that he's going to be the same NFL draft prospect as Jahan Dotson, but I think he's going to be a really, really good NFL draft prospect, maybe like a second round kind of guy.
Yeah, I could see him being a top 100 player. I could see this easily being his last year at Penn State. He scored a touchdown in his first ever game at Penn State, you know, and he didn't even have really a training camp. It was the pandemic year. I think he caught the overtime touchdown for Penn State in the loss at Indiana, and he had some big games then, and they weren't exactly throwing the ball well in 2020. he took a little bit of a backseat to Jahan Dotson, and with good reason. But the other reason I think he's going to I just think his target volume, which I think Sean Clifford has shown that when he had Pat Freiermuth, he looked his way. When he had Jahan Dotson, he looked his way. Of all the, I mean, as much as Mitchell Tinsley's a good player, he doesn't have the same rapport that Sean Clifford has with Parker. I legitimately expect Dustin, unless it's an unforeseen circumstance, I think Parker Washington has to be targeted like 10 times a game. You know what I mean? It's really only a couple times a quarter when you break it down that way, like two and a half times a quarter. But there's no reason not to feed that guy the ball and get him the ball in on a variety of routes. And yeah, he is just a guy that when you're that quick and your hands are that good, he's not going to drop a lot of passes, but he's a hard guy to cover. And you put him in the slot, typically in the slot, it's not necessarily your best corner because a lot of college corners won't travel. But you put him in the slot and then he becomes an even bigger problem. But yeah, he should be Penn State's most dangerous player in the passing game. It might not always be touchdowns, but he's going to be a guy that can move the chains, can make a couple of chunk plays. And I think that he's a guy that Sean knows if he can get the ball in his vicinity, he's not going to drop
it. I also think you're going to see his target volume rise on those plays that are at or behind the line of scrimmage. Quick stuff in the flat, screens. A lot of that went to Jahan Dotson last year for good reason. I think a lot of that is going to go in Parker Washington's direction this year. And I'm excited to see what he's able to do with that. You know, Jahan Dotson had the ability to kind of, he avoided big hits. He kind of burrowed into defenders whenever he was in that. But I think Parker Washington will be even better in that situation.
Yeah, and the key to a receiver being dangerous on screens is almost always you're going to have to make one guy miss at the line of scrimmage, right? And then the whole field opens up. Jahan Dotson probably was as good as anyone on the slip screen ever to play at Penn State. Parker's the same kind of guy. I don't think there's a lot of defenders that are going to be excited to see themselves one-on-one with Parker Washington in space because it's going to be a problem. But yeah, you don't usually give like a big wideout a slip screen because they're contested catch guys. He's the perfect guy for it, and he will inherit that role.
Speaking of Jahan Dotson, I'm not sure if you saw everything he had to say, but Mark Wolkenrich from All Penn State, part of the Sports Illustrated Network, was from the Allentown area before. He got to know Jahan before he arrived at Penn State. I was interested in hearing what Jahan had to say about, number one, last year's team, and number two, you know, his belief in Sean Clifford. You know, it almost pushes him beyond a credible source of information because he believes so much in Sean Clifford. And I mean, I think some of the things that he has to say in terms of, you know, physical tools and the way that he works and things like that, that's true. But he believed last year that without injuries, if everything would have gone well on the injury front, they would have been a college football playoff team. And I don't know if I can make the stretch from 7-6 to college football playoff, but I do. Like, obviously, this group was impacted pretty severely by injuries, but he thinks it's a possibility this year too. What do you think about that?
The defense, and if PJ Mustipher had played the whole season, it would have even been a better defense. The defense was, I think, you know, if you look at the entirety of the Big Ten, you know, Michigan, everyone talks about their defense, but you know, when they played at Beaver Stadium, Michigan's defense played well, but so did Penn State's. I think their defense with a healthy PJ Mustipher would have been almost just as good as Michigan's because of the talent they had at all three levels. I think they showed that early at Wisconsin when they literally won the game. They shut out Indiana. Actually, I think that was Michael Penix's last game. They battered him so badly, and they were really giving Iowa a lot of trouble. Before Clifford got hurt, but also PJ Mustipher got hurt in that game. And I think even some of the plays that Iowa were able to get as the game went on, I think it would have been a lot tougher for them. I think when you look at their defense, it was absolutely contender status in the Big Ten. They were that good, and it was reflected in the draft. The offense, you know, Jahan Dotson clearly is, I think, very close to Sean Clifford. They both made their initial marks at Penn State during that 2019 season. You know, Jahan, he played a little as a true freshman in 18, but in 19, he became a down the field threat for a very good team. The key question is what would a healthy Sean Clifford have done for Penn State's offense? My question is the amount of football that Sean Clifford has played at Penn State, the style of play, and the fact that he runs the ball a lot. I don't know that it's realistic to expect him to get through a season without missing a few games and without getting beat up. And, you know, a lot of that also is on the offensive line as well. But I just don't know that we're going to see Sean Clifford, you know, in pristine condition for 13 games. And that's my question about that. If Sean's healthy, they beat Iowa. They beat Illinois. If he's healthy, I think they are probably going to beat Michigan because he played, but I don't think he was healthy. The Ohio State loss is what it is. And Michigan State, I don't know. But they are probably a 9 or 10 win team if Clifford doesn't get beat up and Mustafa doesn't get hurt.
It is pretty amazing how much luck is necessary over the course of a season. And injuries are a big part of that. But sometimes just the way the ball bounces between turnovers and not, you know, Penn State, whether you're on the right end of that. So I think there was just some bad fortune with injuries last year. And I would say that Penn State really needs to do a better job of resisting the temptation of running Clifford so much. You know, I think they've fallen in love with that play. Yeah. Not, I don't mean eliminate it, but I think you do the bare minimum of that to pose the threat. The threat of him running means just as much as him actually running.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Trace McSorley's career, and the more he carried the ball over his career, I think the less effective he was. You know, I even remember that 2018 game when he carried 25 times for 100, I think it was 175 yards against Ohio State at Beaver Stadium, and they almost won the game, but I don't think Trace was ever the same player after that game. So I agree with you. You can't run your quarterback that much. And if you're going to run him, it's got to be, you got to pick the right spots. And he's also got to be he's got to be smart enough to get down. You know what I mean? He can't take the body blows, and or he's got to, you know, get out of bounds. I thought Sean Clifford, he probably took he's taken some unnecessary punishment during his career. And I think that eventually that's going to work against him.
And I think in that respect, you have to protect Sean from himself because he's a pretty extreme competitor. I don't know if he's ever like in the heat of the moment in that split second decision, if he's willing to really admit that he can't take on that safety or he can't take on that linebacker. Like I really think he believes he can win that collision.
Yeah. And Sean, I mean, Dustin, you look at what he did in high school. I think he played his last year at his high school. I think he had a torn labrum in his shoulder. He didn't get that from throwing the ball. And you know what I mean? He's just a guy that it's admirable that he'll pay the price to try and get the yards, especially on third down. But better offense is probably designed to not let the quarterback have to make those plays. You look at C.J. Stroud at Ohio State. He doesn't run enough. I mean, if he ever started to run the ball, and keep the ball, they'd be even more deadly. But I don't know that C.J. Stroud ever emerged from a game. Maybe the Michigan game was ever sore after a game because he just got the ball out and he let Henderson and the other guys do the running. Penn State's not really built that way. We'll see what Sean Clifford looks like, you know, in the middle of the season because he got hurt on a running play in 2019. You know, he played 2020, but they almost ran the ball exclusively after that 0-5 start. And then last year, he got hurt on, I think, a linebacker blitzed, and I think he got the ball away. It was that big Iowa linebacker, Jack Campbell, hit him. And we never actually knew what all ailed Sean Clifford, but it bothered him, I think, the rest of the year. So he can get hurt holding on to the ball too long, and he can also get hurt not getting down after on a designed run.
Let Sean Clifford touch the ball as little as possible is what you're saying.
Just get the ball out, Sean. Just get to read number one. If it's not there, there's a built-in check down or there's a built-in safe, I think, play in all of those. And you just gotta be quicker, I think, distributing the ball. And I think actually Mike Yurcich kind of hinted at that this offseason, that as he gets through his progressions, he could still be quicker at that.
And I think that is one area where being in the second year of the same offense with the same coordinator can probably help to be able to diagnose and make those reads faster and your progressions faster.
This is the Blue White Breakdown.
Welcome to Curaleaf, a medical marijuana dispensary. Whether you're a longtime patient or you're just getting acquainted with this incredible plant, Curaleaf of Pennsylvania is honored to guide you along your medical marijuana journey. Have questions? Visit us at CureLeaf.com or stop in to see us at any of our locations, including our new State College dispensary located at 1248 South Atherton Street. Let's talk medical marijuana and let our confidence become yours.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening to me talk, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now. Getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I want to touch on your most intriguing series. We did that last week, just kind of bring people up to speed with who's where there. But Javon Williams, I wanted to bring up the Wyo missing offensive lineman. He's a new five-star by On3. They have him as the number 10 player in the country. And in fact, they have him listed as an interior offensive lineman and Alex Birchmeier as the number 2 interior offensive lineman. So Penn State, you know, by those rankings, has the number 1 and number 2 interior offensive lineman in the country in the 2023 class. What are your thoughts on a guy who's 6'4", 290, like Williams is, and who's clearly a pretty dynamic athlete, where he ends up and how that body type maybe lends itself to giving Penn State options to be able to be a swing player or however they want to use him?
Yeah, so, you know, when you talk about the five-star threshold, it's very rare you get a five-star offensive lineman and you try to play him inside, right? They're almost always five stars, because they're great athletes for their size. So it would make sense to me if this kid, and I know he's not done growing, but he could end up being 6'5", 310, 315 fairly easy, probably without Penn State's strength and conditioning program. And that's pretty prototype numbers to play offensive tackle. You know, between 310 and 320, I have no reason to doubt Greg Pickle's recruiting website. And I think you feel the same way. But if he's a five-star offensive lineman, to me, that screams to me that he is going to be just a really, really intriguing offensive tackle prospect. He still might be just, you know, a Quentin Nelson. I don't know about that. You know, that's when I think of a five-star as a guard. That's probably the most recent name that comes to mind. But, man, the fact that he's a little light, I think, to play inside right now. So he looks to me like he's going to be an offensive tackle. I know you follow recruiting very closely, Dustin, and I know you watch a lot of film. When you saw him, did you think that maybe he might be even better than four-star, or did you think he was a legit high four-star when he kind of committed to Penn State?
I mean, he looks the part of a legit four-star to me. Whether he's a five-star or not, I mean, people who spend more time around him and can maybe have a better sense of context of where he fits in with the rest of the offensive linemen in the country. But he's a pretty special athlete, and he's pretty big. I'm with you that for Penn State to move him inside to tackle. And I think this concept is a little fresher for me because of what's going on with Landon Tangwall and him being inside now. It's not to say that he's there. That's where he's going to be. But I think Williams is further away from his ceiling than Tangwall was as a high school player. And I think Williams is a better overall athlete. It's not to take away from Landon Tangwall, but I didn't think he was a left tackle over the long term. I thought maybe he'd hold up as a right tackle. And so maybe you see him, you know, he might very well be, when Caden Wallace moves on, Penn State's best candidate to go to right tackle then too. We'll see. But I think I'm with you, like, for maximum value here, I think you start him at tackle. And I think the other two recruiting services do have him as a tackle.
Landon's up to 330 now, and he, you know, he's a young player. They thought enough of him to play him a little bit last year. There was no doubt in Penn State's minds that Fashanu was going to be the left tackle. They like him enough to not move Caden Wallace from the right tackle spot. So I know that Landon fits a need because they have a need at guard for him to kick inside. But I do think just looking at him, he looks like he's a guy that he was talking about the transition. He always played tackle in high school because you're the best big athlete on the offensive line, you're automatically going to play left tackle in high school, but it's a different game at the major college level. And there, you know, for him to kick inside, there's nothing wrong with that. I think if Landon has designs on playing in the NFL, he should try and learn both of them and be able to play both of them. If you can play four spots on the offensive line in a pinch or, you know, in a primary role, I mean, that's only going to enhance your value. But I'll be real interested to see, because you would think if Ashano's good, he's going to stay at left tackle for a little while because he's still a young player. Who's the future at right tackle? Who's the guy that's going to be? So you're going to, I think we're going to find out really quickly after the 2022 season if Tangwall's future was all along at guard, or maybe they'll look at him as the right tackle of the future.
And you have some other guys. I mean, Drew Shelton in the 2022 class. I mean, how quickly can he come along? You know, would a Javon Williams be able to hit the ground running a little bit early in his career too? So I think Penn State will have some options, and they typically do a pretty good job of figuring out what their best options are where and trying to move those guys in that direction. Real quick, just the last three names in your most intriguing series, which I find to be an intriguing series. And the intriguing player series is intriguing to me. Hakeem Beamon at number 22. Obviously, you know, with nobody really knowing exactly the circumstances of why he didn't play last year and how important he could be in terms of being disruptive. Caden Saunders, the true freshman wide receiver at 21. You know, I think they've got a lot of options, but none like him. So how does that fit into things in that depth chart? And then Juice Scruggs moving from guard to center. Juice Scruggs can be a much, much more dynamic center than Mike Miranda could have been, which is why I think you saw that position switch changed late last year.
Yeah, of the three names you mentioned, the two that intrigue me the most are Caden Saunders and Hakeem Beamon. You know, Hakeem Beamon, there were times in 2020 when he was reserve defensive tackle, he would be in the rotation. You could see he was a player. You could see why Penn State recruited him. You could see why he was a four-star prospect. There's no point in speculating on why he didn't play last year. I've heard some things. I'm not 100% sure. So James ruled him out fairly early. My whole thing with Hakeem is he's a tweener, right? Can you really play 40 or 50 snaps at the three technique at defensive tackle at 260 pounds? Or is there going to be a hybrid role for him where he'll play some inside and he can help them outside? Because adding weight has been a struggle for him ever since he's gotten to Penn State. I've seen him as high as 274 pounds. I've seen him in the 250s. I think he's in the 260s right now. Who knows how much he weighs, but he looks sleek for a defensive tackle. And I just wonder if you're going to play him inside, he can be a really, really effective player. If he's 265 pounds or 262 pounds, quickness has got to be his biggest strength, and he can make that work for him. But do you really want him at 262 or 263 pounds? When they got to go up against Tank Bigsby and Auburn in week three, or when they got to play at Michigan, you know, there's some rugged teams, Minnesota, there's some rugged teams on the schedule late in the year. He's a fascinating player to me because I think you and I could disagree on what his best role might be. And there might be truth in what both of our takes are. So if he's able to play, if he's cleared to play, he's one of their best athletes inside. He might be their best athlete inside. I always see his weight, and I always wonder, what does he really weigh? Like, is he even lighter than that? And they're listing him at 260. But I think he is a real key to the season for the defensive line. I think they like Keziah Izzard and Devon Ellis, but I think Hakeem Beamon gives them a little bit more punch, Dustin. And one thing I would tell you about Caden Saunders is, I was talking to Doug Lamorese on his podcasts for Cleveland.com. He does a great job with it, and he knows Ohio State really well. He told me his daughter went to, I think it was Westerville South, where Caden Saunders is from. So he's literally seen just about all of Caden Saunders' games. And he said the stats don't tell the true story of how great of a player Caden Saunders is, because I don't know if they had injuries or, but he did everything at Westerville South. They couldn't just put him at one position. He was the returner, played receiver. He got the ball almost as a design runner. I think he said he played some quarterback. When you look at his numbers and you're like, why is this guy such a coveted player? Don't be fooled. He did a lot. He sacrificed for that team, but he said he's an unbelievable athlete. And he also brought up KJ Hamler when he talked about Saunders. So as well off as Penn State, I think, is with their top three receivers, if you see enough from Caden Saunders in practice, I think you got to design some plays this year to get him on the field, to get him in space.
If you want to be as threatening as you possibly can be to opposing defenses, I think you need that dynamic. You need teams worrying about him. And he's one of those guys, like the coaching staff. I asked them about being compared to KJ Hamler too, because it's, you know, not just for size, but I think the skill set of being so quick with his feet and so quick to get up to top speed is what's really interesting to me. And the coaching staff compared him to KJ Hamler too. But yeah, I think if you really want your best athletes on the field and you want to torment defenses the best you can, I think he's got to be part of that mix.
Yeah, it feels to me that this is why he made the intriguing list. Is you might not see a lot of him the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season, but I think the more he practices and the more there's kind of a comfort level, and who knows, Penn State might have some injuries, but I just think by the time you get into the meat of the Big Ten season, if he's physically ready to play in the first year of college, and I mean, KJ Hamler was not a big guy, right? Like, you would never say he was physically ready. He was just an unbelievable athlete. I just think the longer the season goes on, the greater the chance you'll see him on the field.
There you go. Bob's most intriguing series will roll on here for at least a few more weeks on PennLive.com. Check it out there.
Through December.
It's so much intrigue. He doesn't even know what to do with it.
I just don't ever want to get to the point where I have to run multiple posts in one day. But I feel like August is a long month, and I can space these bad boys out pretty much till, I'll bet you, the third or fourth week in August, and I'll be loving it. I'll be loving it, Dusty.
And I'll plan on just doing it in audio form too, because it's a good conversation point that will carry us through the month of August also. You can check out everything we do on the Blue White Breakdown, Alexa, Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, YouTube, all of Bob's written content on PennLive.com/PennStateFootball. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Blue White Breakdown, and we'll see you next time.
This has been the Blue White Breakdown, brought to you by Penn Live.